passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back. As we continue here, it is a middle-of-the-week conversation. Stuart Mandel about to join us from The Athletic. And the subject, of course, Jim Harbaugh. Stuart writing recently about the problems of the Big Ten and mentions really an interesting situation as he talks about what Tony Petitti could do. Mentions Mike Slive and Greg Sankey and the way this league has been handled in the past in comparison to where the Big Ten currently is. Stuart, thank you very much. Good afternoon. And I don't even know what the latest on Jim Harbaugh is because so many people are anticipatory of what the next move is, but your overall thoughts on where we are.
You're right. We're just waiting, right? We're waiting from word from Chicago. In the meantime, though, I can't get enough Connor Stallions details, right? That he's operating these weird businesses out of his home and might have a business with Blake Corum. So that keeps me amused while we wait, Paul. But, you know, what you referenced earlier, I mean, you remember it. The SEC of the, let's say, the era when Phil Fulmer didn't go to SEC Media Days because he was going to get subpoenaed, or the era when Lane Kiffin was accusing Urban Meyer of cheating was not the finest hour for the SEC. And Mike Slive was commissioner at the time. He called them all into a meeting and said, this is going to stop. Big Ten has kind of avoided that drama for, they did at least under Jim Delaney, but look what's going on right now. It's not just that Michigan's accused of cheating. The schools are turning each other in. Now we've got this, you know, whistleblower who's saying that Ohio State and Rutgers were sharing Michigan signals with Purdue. I mean, you're dragging half the conference into it at this point. And I just think if Jim Delaney were still the commissioner, this would have all been handled in-house. Like, he would not have stood for this. So I feel bad. Tony Petitti just got there. He started the job in May. He has no prior experience in this area. And he's being dealt a soap opera and a drama unlike I think I've seen in a conference where your team that is currently the highest, well, I guess they're not the highest ranked in the CFP, but the highest ranked in the AP, the defending two-time champion, is about to play their biggest stretch of the season, and their coach might be suspended. And then if he is, the school might take the Big Ten to court. This is not the Big Ten, Paul, of the legends and leaders era, to say the least.
Yeah. I miss those good old days. I used to describe them as the legends and losers. Stuart, so you're sitting in Petitti's chair right now in Chicago. You have to do something. You can't win no matter what you do, but what do you think he's going to do, and how do you think it's going to play?
You know, I think the reason that he's probably fixating on a Harbaugh suspension is that the idea, and it has come up, of like, well, they were manipulating games that were played this season, therefore they should have to forfeit them, or they should be ineligible for the championship game, would deny the players on the team an opportunity. And they're caught in the crosshairs of it. So the idea of just punishing the coach takes that out of it. The problem for him is, as far as we know, NCAA, Big Ten, nobody's uncovered any direct link to Harbaugh to this point. It's just going to basically, I think it's going to get really ugly. I think he has to do what he has to do, because if he's got to look out for the interests of all of his schools, 14 different schools, and 13 of them are saying this guy or this program blatantly broke the rules. They were coming onto our campuses to spy on our teams. You got to do something. And he does. But he also has to follow their rules. They don't actually have an enforcement process the way the NCAA does. He's just kind of going to interpret this very broad policy they have about sportsmanship and use it to say, you know, Michigan, you know, this is poor sportsmanship on your part. Head coach has to take the blame. And then I don't know what happens from there. I mean, part of me thinks Michigan should just get it over with, right? Like, if you think you got a chance to win the national championship, don't you want Jim Harbaugh to be there for the biggest games? If you punt it and it ends up that, like, oh, he actually does have to serve it after all that, then you're just delaying it into even bigger games than what you have now. But I get it. Michigan feels that they're being treated unfairly. There's a rush to judgment that the other coaches are pressuring him into punishing them, and they want to take a stand against it.
Maya Moss Stewart, just seems like about 7 or 8 weeks ago, Deion Sanders was the biggest name in the sport, and suddenly here comes Jim Harbaugh. In terms of this team, because it is so easy for anyone to say they haven't played anyone, but we know they're good. Are they really good? You've been following Michigan for a long time. You know the personnel. I mean, what as they are finally about to play their toughest opponent, what do you think of the team?
Yes, it's true. They haven't played a formidable opponent at this point. But winning every week in dominant fashion in college football is hard. Just look at all the teams that have either lost to somebody they have no business losing to or gotten, you know, pushed to the limit. Alabama, I think, has turned into a really good team, and they have had games that they had no business being in until the end of the fourth quarter. So I think Michigan's probably really good. But I don't know for sure, and I'm looking forward to this game this weekend. Not that Penn State is Georgia by any means, but I think a much better measuring stick, especially because it's there in Happy Valley. It's a tough place to play. Obviously, we don't know how Michigan is dealing with all the controversy surrounding them. If they win that game, and especially win that game convincingly, you know, you have to take them seriously in the national championship conversation. It'll all come down to, obviously, to the game against Ohio State. I think people who say, oh, they haven't even played anybody, haven't even started their season, are taking for granted that it is not as easy as they're making it look to just win by 30, 40 points every week.
Stuart Mandel, let's get to the CFP and all the teeth gnashing over what happened last night. You had some interesting comments on Twitter about what was said, but just give us your overall thoughts on where we are right now with Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, Florida State. You got Alabama at 8th. There's a lot of interesting scenarios.
Well, I think everybody's looking for content to fill. And at the end of the day, like, most of this is going to play itself out, right? Now, there is a potential for some big controversy at the end, because as of now, it feels like every Power 5 conference has a candidate, right? Like, usually the Pac-12 was eliminated by now. The Big 12 came real close to eliminating itself last week if Kansas State had finished the comeback against Texas. But as of now, everybody's got a chance. And I think a really interesting dynamic this year is if Alabama were to beat Georgia in the SEC championship, you would automatically say, like, in a vacuum, of course they got to go to the playoff. Like, that's an amazing win. They'd be 12-1. Problem is they lost at home to one of the other 12-1 teams that would be in consideration. And no, I don't see any way the committee could take Alabama instead of Texas. Maybe they could take both, but for there to be room to do that, you need some upsets down the stretch. It's college football. There usually are upsets. I don't know that it's a given Florida State goes undefeated, even though they have a fairly easy stretch the rest of the way. Washington has been shaky recently. I'd actually be surprised if they're still standing at the end. So, like I said, some of this will play itself out, but it's the last year of the 14 playoff, Paul. It's going to end in messy fashion, right? It would be taking the committee off the hook if we made the last year of the 14 playoff really easy.
I realize we're just parlor talking here, into the bar, but you know the debates that are already starting to formulate, and the one thing I heard a lot about last night was Oregon. I know you've seen them, you follow them very closely. How do you compare and contrast Oregon, Texas, Alabama, which seems to be where most of the talking heads are right now?
I think Oregon has been definitely more dominant than those other two you just mentioned. And their only loss was on a missed field goal at the end of the game against a Washington team that's still undefeated. But I get the argument. I think what has happened that maybe snuck up on people is some of Oregon's wins that seemed big at the time have deteriorated. You know, remember, they were the first one to beat Colorado. And now everybody has beaten Colorado since then. They beat a Washington State team that was ranked early in the season and has just fallen apart. So I can get why people would look at the resume and say, hey, they haven't played that many or beaten that many great teams. But you know what? They went on the road to a really good Utah team. That's the hardest place to play in the Pac-12 and just demolished them. They beat Cal 63-19 last week. They're a really good team. And again, if they run the table and beat Washington in the championship game, And they've got, by the way, between that USC this week and Oregon State, who's ranked fairly high, like there's not even going to be a question. Of course that team's going to be in the playoff.
I know we have to judge it today, but I'm assuming if Ole Miss loses to Georgia, I'm going to Alabama now. We start looking at Alabama's losses, which obviously a very good loss to Texas, but it was at home. We know what could be down the road, but what are your thoughts on the variables with Alabama? Because Texas LSU seemed like a great win to me, and as it was pointed out many, many times today, Alabama did not move because there's just simply nowhere to go.
I think it was partially because there's nowhere to go, and I think it's partially an acknowledgement that, you know, this wasn't the 2019 LSU team, right? This was a team that has, frankly, had one of the worst defenses in the country all year. But I don't want to shortchange Alabama. They've gotten so much better over the course of the season. Obviously, they've beaten, I believe, three current top 25 teams. So there's no question, like, they've evolved into a playoff contending team. Again, I would bring up that it's just bad luck that you're one of your fellow contenders is a team that beat you in the non-conference. If Alabama had scheduled, Texas Tech and beaten them, like this would even be a question, right? They happened to lose to Texas at home, and now Texas is one of their prime contenders. This scenario actually happened in 2 years ago. Cincinnati was number four and Notre Dame was number five. And there was no way Notre Dame could pass them because they had lost to Cincinnati. And so, you know, if you're Alabama, I mean, obviously you've got to win the rest of your games, which is no easy thing. And then you got to root for Texas to lose. Just get them out of there. And then your path becomes a lot clearer.
Stuart Mandel, some great stuff. Read his column about where the Big Ten has gone wrong and where the SEC decided to clean things up about 13 years ago. Many thanks, Stu. Really good conversation. We will take a break. Your phone call's right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back. And let's check in with Larry first. Good afternoon.
What's up, Paul?
Larry?
Yeah, man, I got to go have an upper GI killing me, man. I can't hardly talk. But I'm going to try. I get this beer down. I'll be all right. Hey, check this out. About eight major schools got hit with taking major donation dark money and not declaring it. And you know who one of them was?
What's that, Larry?
Texas A&M, Jack. The SEC school.
Okay.
Taking that dark money, $8 million. I don't guess they thought they had to declare it. Anyway, getting to what about this championship, I wonder how long it takes them to figure out how to screw us over. But they figure out more ways than a Chinese arithmetic. I mean, I'm telling you, man, we just keep getting it one way or another. And these people are all in on it, all of them. And you know, all of a sudden, all these sissy schools come in here and just take over everything. And now here we are, tough-ass SEC school, got to put up with it. And it ain't right, man. I mean, if we win SEC, we may not even go to the championship.
Larry, first of all, why don't you try to win the SEC before you go belly up?
Yeah, well, why don't you quit talking out like, you're the one that brought it up, Paul. Don't get on me.
Well, but you haven't even beaten Kentucky and Auburn yet.
Well, you brought it up, not me. Why don't you jump on somebody? Go jump on Legend or something. Somebody, you know.
I'm never going to do that. You know that better than I do.
Well, I know. That's your boyfriend. That's your boyfriend. He's a movie star now. That's the only reason you're probably going to go in the movies with him. It's going to be the Feinbaum movie cast. Legend and Feinbaum starring in college football.
Yeah. Larry, assuming that what Mandel said turns out to be true, how would you feel not getting in the playoffs because of that Texas loss?
I would find out where they live and poop on their doorsteps and run. That's what I'd do. I'm going to tell you that, yeah, I'd really be pissed. I don't know, what can you do, Bob, but you complain, and you don't want to hear me complain. Apparently, I won't guess I got no out. Go jump off the damn Coosa River Bridge, I guess.
No, don't do that, Larry. I keep telling you, if you're going to die, do it out of season, okay, so we have more time to get there.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. You know, I mean, it's going that way, and you see it leaning that way. And you know what they're trying to do, just like they dumped Georgia to number two. Why? Michigan's a crook. They're a bunch of crooks. Get out there filming the damn plays. Come on, man. Bunch of ripoffs. Are you still there?
Yeah, Larry, I'm here, man. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, see, you get that silent mode. It scares me. Look here. That Michigan crooked, and you know it. The Big Ten has always been crooked. Oh, that's why Jeff don't call in anymore, because he knows
Larry,
they're a bunch of ripoffs.
You're suggesting that the SEC is pristine, but the Big Ten is crooked. Is that right?
You got that right, and we the upright jacks. We're the good old redneck boys. We play fair. We just kick your ass up over your shoulders and think you're a humpback.
Thanks, Larry. Charles is up next in Mobile. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? I was just wondering. I thought that I heard correctly a while ago. The guy said that we may not make the playoffs. I'm talking about Alabama. Even if we win the SEC championship game?
Well, all we're doing right now are talking about scenarios. And he said if, for instance, let's say Michigan wins out, Washington wins out, Texas wins out, Florida State wins out. And then
you think that would leave?
He said it's possible that Alabama could get squeezed.
Oh, man, that would be terrible, Paul.
I do not believe that, by the way. I think that's highly unlikely.
I don't believe that either, Paul. I believe that if Alabama takes care of business with Kentucky, Chattanooga, and Auburn, and beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, they have punched their ticket and earned their way to the playoff.
I completely concur. I think it would be absurd to put somebody in there over them.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. You have a good day, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling. And let's check in with Jack, who is in North Carolina. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Mr. Paul. Listen, I'd like to settle this turkey doodle argument about the college football playoff rankings.
Okay.
A year ago, I think, Mr. Paul, I heard you say this. Now, correct me. You said they don't matter. You said I don't care. Because I know Mr. Paul knows they don't matter right now. Now, let me end this turkey doodle respect. If we don't get respect, and they don't respect us. I can't believe Alabama's not going to make it. I will appoint you judge. I will bring a civil lawsuit, a summary judgment, which means I come into court, Judge Paul, I have evidence. The evidence I present will prove that it's a moot point, the rankings. It's a lame duck season, the rankings, because right now the top 10 teams would make the playoffs next year. Is that correct, Mr. Paul?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, let me tell you about the turkey doodle don't get respect. We owned a stud farm in Louisiana. We had racehorses. I went to the racetrack and picked up a racing program. You know in that racing program it has? The clocker picks the four horses he thinks going to win, which is like the college football playoffs, the four horses. I don't care what he says. I'm going with $100 in my pocket. I'm going to bet my horse. Now, I don't go to the track and say this, Judge Paul. Hey, yo, Miss Peekaboo's my horse. She's not getting no respect. Okay, they put the 1-2, they put the Alabama in there, and they put the Georgia in there. And look, nobody respected Miss Peekaboo. You know what, Mr. Paul, what I say when I get into the track? Open the gates and get to the finish line and see who crosses the finish line first. And that's what happens in college football.
Jack, thanks so much for the call. We are going to get turned to some legal advice here on college sports. Very important story making the rounds, including the Michigan case. We'll talk to Michael McCann next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and Michael McCann joining us. And there's so, from Sportico, there's so many issues to talk to Michael about, who's one of the noted sports attorneys in the country. I want to save Jim Harbaugh, Michigan, for last. I want to start with this case that happened the other day that really got not a lot of attention in the mainstream world because I think it came on a Friday and the game started. And Michael, let's get to the class action, the amateur case first, because it seemed from a distance, and I don't understand any of this, but it seems like this is really important. Can you explain it to us? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Yeah, it's important because the federal judge out in California has certified damages classes for this case called In Re College Athlete NIL Litigation. And the gist of this case is twofold. One is that college athletes are saying in the Power Five, we should have been paid before 2021 for NIL, and the NCAA and its schools joining together to prevent us from being paid left us with nothing, and we should get money for that. The other big piece of it is money that they argue should go to them for being on TV. Not only TV, but also video games. But the big money is in TV, that these broadcasting contracts are, as we know, a ton of money. The players argue we should get a cut of that. And the judge is saying this is no longer just a case brought by three athletes. This is now a class action, meaning I think almost 15,000 athletes are represented. It could be, if the NCAA loses, we're talking billions of dollars in damages. So it could be, if not a knockout blow, devastating to the NCAA.
And I know we can't speculate too much, but let's take this a little bit deeper. And what type, I mean, you mentioned the damage, but expand on that a little bit and make it understandable to us lay people. What could really happen?
Well, if it goes to trial, the players are going to say, look, if you look at pro athletes, they get under collective bargaining agreements about 50% of revenue, and that includes TV money. So even though Tom Brady or whoever doesn't get a set cut of TV money, he and other players and go league by league, they're all getting money through TV deals as a function of collective bargaining. College athletes can't do that because they're not employees, at least yet. So they can't form a union. So the plaintiffs are arguing here, college athletes are worth a certain amount of these broadcasts. So people wouldn't tune in if they weren't watching players pay. And whatever that percentage is, it's going to be a sizable percentage. And all of the money that is being paid to conferences and schools and the NCAA, the players say we should get a cut of that. And we should have gotten a cut years ago. We should get a cut now. We should get a cut going forward. So it's a huge chunk of money.
Chatting with Michael McCann. Michael, a lot more on that subject in the future. Let me get to the issue of the day in college football, and that's the Jim Harbaugh situation. There's so many things happening here. I don't want to pin you down to what could happen if this happens, but give us an overview of your perspective on what has happened so far, how the Big Ten is handling it. Contemporaneous to this, there's the NCAA, which we probably don't need to spend a lot of time on because we know what the answers are. But frame the story for us from a legal standpoint.
Yeah, so it looks like the Big Ten's trying to act quickly, that it seems like it's being pressured maybe by rival schools of Michigan to make a decision on what appears to be some sort of sign-stealing, in-person scouting controversy, rule-breaking by at least one guy, Connor Stallions, and according to what the allegations are, and who knows who he hired. So there's that whole piece of it. And then there's the piece, if the Big Ten punishes Michigan and Harbaugh now with the season coming to an end, they will likely, I imagine, go to court and seek a temporary restraining order, and they would do it in Michigan, where judges are elected. That doesn't mean that they're going to be biased, but it may be a better forum for them than another state. and they're going to argue that the Big Ten is acting in breach of its own rules, that they're acting hastily before the NCAA is acting, that they're relying on whatever evidence they have hasn't led the NCAA to act, so why should the Big Ten act earlier? Michigan would say prematurely, and they'd have to show irreparable harm. So they would say that, look, we can't get these games back. If you take Harbaugh out, we're not the same team without him, particularly against these opponents. But they'd have to go through a litany of things, and the judge would have to act pretty quickly, too, to make a decision on whether to give a restraining order. If that happens, then there's no suspension for now, and the games continue. So there's a lot that could happen real fast.
So let me just expound on that a minute. Let's say tomorrow, for the sake of argument, the commissioner issues a suspension of Jim Harbaugh. You know the Michigan attorneys are ready. What would they likely do? You said, would it be a state or federal situation?
Probably state. They would want it in state with the judges being elected.
Right.
They don't want it in federal. They want to keep it in state court, and they hope, luck of the draw, they get a judge that's going to be sympathetic. Now, the commissioner and the conference are going to say, well, wait a second, Michigan agreed to these rules. These rules give the commissioner enormous discretion in what to do, including what he can rely on. So the conference is going to have a strong argument that it basically has a ton of authority, a ton of discretion, and importantly, Michigan contractually agreed to that by virtue of being in the conference. So that's going to be the rebuttal.
How quickly do these things move, and what is the mountain to climb to get a temporary injunction?
Yeah, I mean, a temporary injunction, restraining order, it's considered an extraordinary measure under the law, so it's tough to get normally, but it's not impossible, and it could happen in a day or two, conceivably. The judge could decide, I want briefs in, I'm going to have a hearing. More likely, it wouldn't happen. I mean, so let's say your hypothetical, Paul, that the suspension comes tomorrow, that prevents Harbaugh from being in the game 2 days later. So I imagine the judge would be urged to act by Friday evening, at least, to make a decision. So it could happen. Again, that's really fast in normal times, but these aren't normal times. These aren't normal people. And sometimes courts might move a little bit faster for that reason.
And in terms of the other side, based on what you said, considering that Michigan is a member of the Big Ten, is there exposure, or how much exposure would there be for the Big Ten if they came down with some drastic or draconian measure against the university and Harbaugh?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the exposure is going to be, have they had this issue before with sign stealing, in-person scouting, and what did they do when that happened? And the worry I would have if I'm the conference is this has come up before, maybe with a less smaller profile coach or school that isn't as prominent or as successful, and that they didn't do anything. I don't know if that's true, but that would be the worry, that they've created some sort of past practice where they didn't do anything. And if you remember in Deflategate, that was one of Tom Brady's arguments, that players had tampered with footballs using Stickum. And Brady's lawyers said, well, why is it that with Brady, he gets a 4-game suspension, but with those guys, they got a letter saying to cut it out. They weren't even fined, let alone suspended. If we see something like that here, that could certainly make the conference look bad.
And one other thing, and again, I'm asking you to comment on what others are reporting, but you've seen the reports that two other schools were involved. They provided information about Michigan to Michigan's opponent last year in the Big Ten championship game. Does that really matter to the issue of Michigan right now in front of Tony Petitti?
It matters if this happened before and he didn't do anything about it. That's where it's going to matter. Now, I don't know if it's the same thing, right? Was it in violation
of the NCAA?
There
is gray area, because what Michigan has done is send reportedly Connor Stallions out to scout. They're just providing information that they had.
Yeah. So it's less intentional, I guess, although maybe the end result is the same. If I'm Michigan, I'm going to say it's a distinction without a difference. At the end of the day, it's providing a competitive advantage, and that they're sort of making – the conference is making this into a much bigger deal because it's Michigan, because it's Jim Harbaugh. At least that's what – if I were Michigan, I would argue that.
Amazing stuff. Michael McCann, thank you very, very much. We have 10 more things we could talk to you about. We'll get you back soon, I hope. Thank you for your time. We take to the break right now. We'll go to the White House in a little bit. There was a conclave up there with many well-known athletes. We'll talk about that. We're back after the break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We head to Ohio, and Elliot is up next.
Paul, what's not to talk about this week? There is no accountability across the board. There's no accountability for that hit on Jaden Daniels for the same defender that took out Quinn Ewers. There's no accountability for Michigan. Guess what, Paul? In today's world, all you have to do is deny, deny, defend. Jim Tressel never really had to quit. He could have just stayed. Same with Nixon. He could have stayed. It's a different world. Michigan can play this game all the way to the end. The CFP committee can keep Ohio State number one because who cares? You can do anything you want now, Paul. It's open. It's open season. Deer season has just started.
Randy is up next. Hello, Randy. Ellie is up next. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Paul. My name is Ellie, and I'm 8 years old.
Yes, it's great to have you on our program, Ellie.
I just wanted to say that Nick...
Nick Saban?
Saban is the best coach.
Ellie? I completely agree with you. Well, thank you for sharing that information, and I hope you have a great day. Brandon is up next in Mississippi. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, Paul. That little fella just said Nick Saban's the greatest coach. Yes, he is. He has produced many, many great coaches. I was wanting to talk about, you know, looking forward to 2025 season, you know, with the SEC. I've been, you know, looking at the demographics. Do you think it will be divided between the Mississippi-Alabama line, you know, going back to, say, from the Mississippi line, Alabama line is going to be the west and the other is going to be the east? And I just wanted your opinion on it, and I love your show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brandon. As best I know, there will not be divisions, so the line of demarcation won't matter. What the SEC is going to do is just have the top two teams play each other for the championship. A lot of rivalries are going to go by the wayside. We should know the next year's schedule in about 6 weeks. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Jace is up next in Augusta. Hello, Jace. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I'll be at the Georgia Ole Miss game this weekend, and I just heard where Kirby hadn't ruled Bowers out yet for the game this weekend. Well, evidently, there's reports he's running 18 to 19 miles an hour, so he may be full speed. I don't think he's going to play a huge role in the game, but I mean, as far as the decoy goes, you know as well as I do, if he's in the game,
yeah, Jace, I've heard that. We'll check with Griff tomorrow and see what he knows, but that's a big factor if Brock is back, especially with what is coming the next couple of weeks. Dwayne is up next, still looking to find.
Hey, Paul, five bombs.
Dwayne, what's
yeah,
up?
Yeah, we seen you on the sideline. Greg Sankey said he's going to do an investigation on you, helping Nick Saban out, stealing calls. What'd you say about that, huh?
That's funny, Dwayne.
Huh?
That is very funny.
Hey, Greg, thank you. Say, hey, we saw you on the sideline, too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, helping Nick Saban out. I know that's right. Everybody know that. Now, bye.
What a call. Hall of Fame right there. Vance is up next in Georgia. Hey, Vance.
Hey, Paul. God, we're in trouble today. Come on, man. What's going on? Now the narrative is all Michigan talk. It's not only on your show, it's everywhere. These are the kind of things that make me root against a bunch of innocent young men. The other thing is, I've been listening now since 2014. Not forever, but this I-Man stuff is getting out of hand. You know, the only person that talks like this when he's describing somebody other is him. Nobody, I've never heard anyone talk like that. You know, and by the way, what's up with that picture? What's he trying to enter a portrait contest of who could horrify kids the most?
Yeah, well, I think he won the Charles Manson lookalike in high school, so he's trying to replicate that now.
Oh, well, you could stamp his face and go and make Manson cookies. And I can see it now. There's nothing worse than a heating and air man trying to sound super sophisticated when he's just a redneck like the rest of us. And he goes down in his basement.
We're up against the break. We'll head to the White House now and talk to the great Keith Marshall.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.